listening to the news and reading the newspaper, I get the impression that society is really sick. Is it worse than in the past?
Well, the answer to that is only if you're alone or with someone. In other words, it's sick. Yes, it is. And it's sick because we have politicians in office that believe that they can solve every problem by another piece of legislation, which means that they are passing over 256,000 new laws in all the cities, towns, and the states, and the federal government across the country every year. This is an incredible and massive amount of regulation, and it's coming out of the fact that the government is now in control of the counterfeiting operation. They're counterfeiting money, and they have to spend it into circulation in order for it to get spent. In other words, they have to fund massive government programs to get it circulating in society, and they're doing that to the tune of $500 billion per year. So that creates a massive amount of employment in government that over-regulates and causes them to have to interfere in every facet of your life, because the only thing government does is regulate. They don't produce anything of any value. So their over-regulation interferes with productivity, that interferes with the production of wealth, with prosperity, and the ability of the people to take care of themselves. So we have this constant degeneration effect because government employees are interfering in our personal rights and liberties.
Am I off base here, or are my children getting a less than adequate education?
Far less than adequate education, as a matter of fact. And the reason that they are is that the public educational school system has turned out to be more than a babysitting operation. And we have a serious problem in public education because it's not honing in on the kids' needs for education. And it's not teaching them how to learn. They're lecturing to the kids, but they're not teaching them how to learn on their own. And we need to teach our children how to learn on their own. Now, number one, we want to remember that the government that we know now threw God out of the educational systems, God our Creator. They threw the Ten Commandments of the Bible out of the educational system. This removed the teachings of the principles of morality in the schools and opened up the doors to all kinds of secular teachings and lecturings that lead kids off in a direction that's other than intellectual. I should say intellectually stimulating. Now, my position is if the government threw God out of the school system, then our kids do not belong in that school system. We have a requirement to take them out of the school system. Now, many of your Christian school systems have wonderful programs like PACE programs, and I'm sure other school systems do as well that are not public, but they have PACE programs that bring the kids through each of the lessons one at a time. And it teaches the kids how to learn, because they learn and they read the questions and they answer the questions, and they can proceed at their own pace. And that's why they call it the PACE program. You can put kids of all ages in one classroom in their own booths and give them the assignments that they're ready for. And as they complete each of the assignments, they go on to the next, meaning that the more intelligent students can progress at a much faster rate, and the less intelligent students can go slower and take their time, all the time that they need to complete the lessons correctly and to learn. That way, when they're finished with all the lessons, they have a substantially higher educational level than those that are in public school systems. And because of the degradation of morality in the public educational school systems, it has a tendency to drag everybody down to the lowest common denominator. If you have a look at the street gangs, the leader of the gang on the street is always the worst in the group, never the best. It's always the most degraded individual, the one that will commit the most crimes, the one that will do the most cursing, the one that do the most foul acts. That's the leader of the group. Well, you want to withdraw your kids from that syndrome and put them in an intelligent educational program that will give them the best opportunities for learning, and that means don't send them to the public educational school systems.
It seems government is consuming more and more of my life. What can I do about it?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, government is now consuming on the average of 33 to 50% of an individual's life, and I should up that to more like 70-80%, because in addition to the taxes that you have to pay to run this this government, they also interfere with your life to the point to where you have to spend maybe 30% of your life keeping books and records for them. So what is it you can do? Well, I suggest that you take a look at the employee-employer relationship. If you, as an employer, were hiring an employee to work for you, and he came in late, and he lied to you, and he stole from you, and he cheated you, he left on breaks early, and he came back late, what would you do with that employee? Well, you'd fire him. And how do you fire him? Well, you stop paying him. Well, that's how you stop paying bad government employees. And what you have to do is you have to learn how to cease paying them to pervert your rights to life, liberty, and property, to sabotage your rights to life, liberty, and property. And the way that you do that, first of all, there's all kinds of rules and regulations in the system that you can utilize to minimize your taxes to the lowest possible level. The use of offshore tax havens through trust organizations are extremely beneficial for doing that. And you can also learn how not to be a subject matter of the jurisdiction of the Internal Revenue Code. And if you just take a look at the Internal Revenue Code just superficially here, I'm going to give you the best lesson you ever had on the Internal Revenue Code. The Internal Revenue Code covers things that are internal to the code, like Social Security, Railroad Retirement Act, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, excise taxes. So where is the jurisdictional authority for the code to apply to you? Well, it's probably the Social Security program. And the rule of law is you owe your servitude to whoever you receive your benefits from. So if you sign up for Social Security, you're a benefited slave of the state. Therefore, you have to pay the taxes to support that system that you're eligible for benefits from. So if you want to be totally outside the system and not be required to follow or to pay taxes, in other words, to be external to the Internal Revenue Code, you have to give up all eligibility for benefits. You have to close down everything associated with the Social Security number and never use the Social Security number ever again for anything. Now you're not eligible for the benefits. Now you're not required to file or to pay taxes because you will have no income.
Keith, I know a number of businesses who have been forced to close. Why is a small businessman being inundated with regulations and taxes?
Well, it's the philosophy of the 1930s shakedown campaign what they called the protection rackets of the 30s. They'd come along, in the 30s, and they'd say, we're here to protect you from any possible bombings or fires that you could have, in your building here, and it's going to cost you so much money, and if you don't pay us, we can't, guarantee that you're not going to be wiped out, bombed or burned out. And of course, if the store owner did not comply, then the mafia would come in and of course, bomb the building or burn the business owner out in order to be able to control business owners and make them fearful if they did not pay the protection money to the mobsters. Well, we don't have the mobsters going door-to-door anymore as mobsters. We have the mobsters coming to the doors as so-called government employees that are there to help you. In other words, you have to watch out for people who say a couple of things like, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you. Because they're there to over-regulate just for one reason. They have nothing else to do. Government doesn't do anything but regulate. So when you send all these counterfeit funds, in other words, allow the government to print counterfeit paper currencies and circulate in the economy as money, they have to spend it in regulation. That's the only way that they have to spend those funds. So they hire those people to do this regulatory process. And in doing the regulatory process, they have to come in and find things wrong with you so they can justify their existence. And if you allow them to do this, the stream of regulation will be totally unending to the point to where it'll put business people out of business. And this is the most difficult challenge of the small independent business individual, is being able to balance all the government regulation and all the taxes they have to pay with the monies that are coming in from sales. It's a very, very difficult challenge because taxes go up every year, and they go up more than what you have revenues to come in to be able to offset all the expenses that are rising. And you have to stay on top of that. And one of the ways to stay on top of that is to reorganize in free enterprise. Now, a lot of businesses don't have to have a commercial store frontage. They don't have to be in the interstate commercial regulatory jurisdiction. They can be in free enterprise. In other words, they can operate as an individual in free enterprise or through trust organizations in free enterprise where there's absolutely no filing, no paying, no reporting of all these taxes, and there's no regulation over their activities. It's just 100% freedom of association with other individuals where you're sharing your talents with other people and you get paid for those services. and absolutely no government regulation whatsoever. And I know there's going to be a lot of interest in this subject matter, and I want you to know that it's not only possible, but I've done it for many years of my life. I've been in free enterprise probably about half of my life, and consistently for the last 16 years, and I want you to know that it does work. You can be free in America. All you have to do is give it a try.
Okay, Keith, is the Federal Reserve a government bank? And what is the Federal Reserve note, and is it money?
No, the Federal Reserve is not a government bank. It's a foreign private corporation of entrepreneurs that were able to con the government into establishing a national bank. And it's really a foreign bank from a foreign source that is contracted with the Congress to run a what they call a Federal Reserve banking system that is not reserved at all. What they do is, in order to create what they call money, and I call it unmoney, they're able to counterfeit paper currencies off of a printing press and also make bookkeeping entries in books that are loaned out and utilized as money in society. In other words, it's a disastrous program that allows a very, very exclusive group of men, which is about 12 in total, to control all the financial resources of America. That is a devastating thought, to think that you would entrust that any group of people at all with that kind of power to control the money for this country. And let's take it from this perspective. Let's say that you all give me the power to control the money. I can print all the money that I want to. I can put all the bookkeeping entries in an account that I want to. How long would it be before I own Washington? Wouldn't be very long, now would it? How long before I own the West Coast? Not very long, right? How long before I own America? Not very long, right? How long before I own the world? Not very long, right? In other words, you can conquer the world with a printing press if you have enough credibility given to it by the people to support it. Is a Federal Reserve note a note? No, it is not. A note is an instrument required to be redeemed by the maker in a specified sum at a specified time and a specified amount. The Federal Reserve note is not redeemable in anything. If you take it back to a Federal Reserve bank, they won't redeem it in anything. They will not give your money back to you. See, it was originally redeemable in gold and silver, and that's how it got accepted in this country. And then, of course, the government went into bankruptcy in the 30s. They removed the redeemability of gold, and they debased it until the silver had to be removed as a backing in 1974. Nixon closed the gold window internationally in 1971. So all it is a worthless piece of paper that's not redeemable in anything. As a matter of fact, they have defaulted on it. The federal government is in total, even the Federal Reserve is in total 100% bankruptcy because they are not honoring the redeemability of these Federal Reserve notes in real money. Now, real money is gold and silver coin. That's Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution of the United States of America. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. So in order to pay debt, you have to have gold and silver coin in this country to do it. And since you don't, since you only have worthless paper currencies, you have not paid any debt at all in your lifetime if you're paying it in Federal Reserve notes. Therefore, you are a bankrupt.
Hey, where's the nation's gold that used to be in Fort Knox, Keith?
Well, the Federal Reserve, the private banking syndicate, stole the gold, and they also stole the silver. And this is how they did it. It was really a real slick operation that they pulled off. It was the biggest mafia hit operation in the history of the world. They came out with a counterfeiting operation in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act that allowed the Federal Reserve to print notes that were redeemed in the gold and silver held in Fort Knox for the people of the United States of America. Then these worthless paper currencies circulated as money, and of course the people were accepting those because they could go down to the bank and get their gold and silver back anytime they wanted to, until of course they did the bankruptcy trick of the Great Depression of the 30s and removed the redeemability of the gold. They made gold illegal to be held by the citizens of the United States. And like I said before, they withdrew the backing of the silver in 1974. So the way that they did this, they just created incredible inflation because they went to a 10% reserve banking margin shortly after the 1913 Federal Reserve Act. And that meant that they could print up 10 times more Federal Reserve notes than they had money, real money, gold and silver, to back it up in the vaults at Fort Knox. And next, the requirement for the contract. In other words, in order for the Federal Reserve to be allowed to print these paper currencies, counterfeit paper currencies circulating in money in this country, and the Congress being able to borrow those from the Federal Reserve, the Congress was required to pay a rent charge, an interest charge, which is really a rent charge, to rent the Federal Reserve notes into circulation. And they had to pay to rent those circulations, I'm sorry, they had to pay to rent those paper currencies into circulation by paying an interest charge to the Federal Reserve in gold. Now, in the payment of this gold to the Federal Reserve for the renting of the Federal Reserve notes into circulation caused a depletion of the gold in Fort Knox, and you can trace that trail over the Federal Reserve, because now all the gold is being held in the Federal Reserve vaults in New York, which is a foreign private corporation owned by mainly foreigners, not Americans. Okay, so that's where the gold went. It went to the Federal Reserve. It went through this con job of paying interest to borrow worthless paper currencies into the society. And we are now a bankrupt nation. We don't have the gold and silver to, as money anymore. We don't have it to back up any circulating notes anymore. And people are not buying any property anymore because they're using someone else's money to do it with. You cannot buy or own property with Federal Reserve notes.
Okay, Keith, who is our national debt owed to then?
Well, the government wants you to believe that you owe it to yourself, so you accept it. And that's an interesting concept. They say, we owe this debt to ourselves. It's not really that big of a deal because we owe it to ourselves. Okay, great. I owe it to myself. I cancel mine. I don't owe it anymore. Because if I owe it to myself, I have the power to cancel it. So therefore, it is canceled. I don't owe it anymore. Therefore, I don't have to pay the taxes to support it anymore. The real issue is, okay, who is the debt owed to? Well, the United States government, who made this contract. By the way, in the United States government is not we the people of the United States of America. These are some very, very special interest people that are making these contractual obligations outside the Constitution, so therefore it's their personal debt. So the people who entered into these agreements to pay the Federal Reserve the interest on the national debt owe the national debt to the Federal Reserve, which is a foreign financial power. And all you have to do is to eliminate the debt. I tell you what, I know how to eliminate the debt overnight. All you have to do is nationalize the Federal Reserve. You have to eliminate the Internal Revenue Service, eliminate all interest on the money, and have absolutely no deficit, totally 100% prohibit. And by the way, the Constitution already does that, prohibits the national government from counterfeiting paper currencies, from having anything but gold and silver coin as our money in the United States of America, prohibits them from borrowing anything but money to support the government. Money is gold and silver coin. It's not worthless Federal Reserve notes. So all we have to do is enforce the Constitution, throw the Federal Reserve out, and boom, right away we don't have any interest on the money anymore because we don't have to pay to the foreign financial powers, the reserve. And boom, the income tax is gone, and boom, all we have to do is next is to stop viewing government as an organization that has the ability to take care of our needs. They produce nothing of any value. They have nothing to offer us. Okay, so what we do, what we're doing at the present time is they're collecting 100% of the taxes, 70% goes to run the collection process for the government, and 30% comes back to help the needy. In other words, if we were not paying the government to try to help us out, we would have 100% of those revenues to build a stronger society. So can we build a stronger society with 100% of the revenues or a stronger society with 30% of the revenues?
Okay, we hear the words deficit and national debt. How do these two items compare?
Well, the budget deficit is an annual deficit of how much in counterfeit paper currencies or expenditures that the federal government is going to spend every year over and above what they bring in taxes. And it's currently about $500 billion. And the gross national product is approximately $1.7 trillion. Therefore, that means we're going to have about 33% inflation. And if we look at how much taxes they're trying to rip off from the average individual, we're going to look and see it's about 33%. In other words, they're trying to steal back from the producers the amount of money to cover the inflation that they're creating by counterfeiting paper currencies and introducing them into the economy. Now, as far as the national debt is how much the United States owes out. And by the way, the real economists are saying now that the correct national debt is approximately $67 trillion, not the $6 trillion or so that the government reports, but about $67 trillion. And that seems a little bit more logical because they have stolen all the Social Security trust funds, and that's hitting somewhere around $25 trillion. So we know that the $6 to $7 trillion or whatever it is that they're reporting is an absolute lie, and it's probably more like $67 trillion, which is more than all the above ground wealth in America. Okay, in other words, by living on a debt instrument, by allowing the Federal Reserve to counterfeit paper currencies, by allowing them to introduce that in the economy as money for purchasing power, we have accumulated the most massive debt ever in the history of the world. We have encumbered all of our wealth and our children's wealth as collateral for that debt to the Federal Reserve, which means we're now a bankrupt country. We own nothing, and we've also mortgaged our kids' future.
When do you think they're going to change our money and go to a cashless society?
Well, I think they're going to change the money and go to a cashless society in about 1933. And I believe that they started doing that in 1913 with the introduction of the counterfeit Federal Reserve note that was introduced in the economy and spent in circulation as money. If you recall, we had gold and silver as our lawful money of account. That's, no debts can be paid in anything but gold and silver coin, as I explained earlier. And they introduced a Federal Reserve note in 1913, which was a change. They started circulating worthless debt instruments as money instead of, the typical gold and silver for all the transactions. Now, in 1913, they removed the redeemability of gold. They changed it again. And, of course, they've been inflating and depreciating the purchasing power of the worthless paper currency ever since. So they've been changing it every year. In 1974, they removed the redeemability of gold. In 1971, they closed the gold window. So we have seen a constant devaluation and change to a cashless society ever since 1913. And by the way, Federal Reserve notes are not cash. They're a worthless debt instrument. And a lot of people refer to those as frauds or green stamps, but they're not money. I call them barter papers or unmonies because you can't not buy anything with them. Everything you buy to with Federal Reserve notes become owned by the Federal Reserve and is collateralized for the national debt.
We've all heard the tax or income tax is voluntary, but I know people who have had big problems when they didn't pay them. And what would happen if we did quit paying?
That is correct. The income tax is voluntary, and those people that get into trouble for not volunteering are volunteers. The question is, when was it you volunteered to be a taxpayer? What was the point that changed you from a non-taxpayer to a taxpayer? At one point in your life, you were not filing returns, you were not paying taxes, you had no income, and boom, all of a sudden, all these penalties come upon you. Well, let's look at it in realistic terms here. Before you went down and got the Social Security number, you could go out and earn all you wanted, no filing, no paying, no reporting. You were not a taxpayer, had no taxpayer's identification number, you were not eligible for benefits from the government had no interest in you, you got no forms from them. As soon as you went down and applied for the benefits by getting a Social Security number, you became a volunteer. The voluntary nature of it is that you volunteered to pay taxes to support the benefit programs that you just made yourself eligible for by getting a Social Security card and by using it. What would happen if everybody stopped paying income tax? We would have the biggest boom in this country ever in the history of the world. Because instead of channeling the funds into very, very destructive behavior, like funding government employees to threaten, intimidate, harass people, and interfere with people's lives and take 30 to 70% of their wealth away from them, we would be investing those funds into business activities and developing the most scientific, the best well-researched products in the world. We'd become the world's leader again. Instead of companies packing their bags and leaving this country, they would be coming here to enjoy the benefits of those freedoms and the benefits of the profitability that business people enjoy in a prosperous country, and prosperity would return to America and we would flourish once again. All we have to do is get this counterfeiting operation off of our back. Fire half the government employees. We can reduce crime by 50% overnight if you fire half of the police officers. Police officers across the country, and I'm including the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and all these other governmental agencies in this, what they're doing now is they're out there creating crime. They're infiltrating patriotic groups that are trying to restore freedom to America because of the lost freedoms that are being taken away by government employees, and they're infiltrating those groups with these government agencies attempting to induce them into the commission of a crime so they can arrest them and put them in jail. In other words, we have so many government employees that they're out there creating crime. This is illegal, it's unconstitutional, it's a violation of rights, it's a violation of just common sense principles of fairness and justness and justice, liberty, and, you know, the pursuit of life, liberty, and property for all people. To have government employees that are hired to come in and talk you into committing a crime and then arrest you for doing what they talk you into is just totally ludicrous. And this is not a small issue, this is a widespread issue in America.
I've heard Social Security might go broke in a few years. Is the government going to let this happen?
Social Security is already broke. Social Security was set up in 1933 to be an actuarially sound trust fund. In the Cardoza case, that was Judge Cardoza, he ruled that Social Security was constitutional just for two reasons. Number one, it was supposed to be an actuarially sound program. In other words, your funds are to be held and invested. There's accrue interest, so you'd receive back the principal and interest at age 65. Number two, that they would be held in trust and secured for the people by a board of trustees. And number three, it would save men and women from the rigors of the poorhouse. In other words, they lied. As soon as the funds went in, they stole them all, they spent them all. There's nothing there except a bunch of dead instruments that the U.S. government is putting in there because the funds are being put in the general treasury and they spend them out as they get them in. That's why we have somewhere between a 20 and a 30 trillion deficit in Social Security alone. It's an absolute absurd and bankrupt program.
Well, what's going to happen to us if Social Security fails?
We'll all be better off as a whole. Now, there's going to be pockets of people going to be hurt severely because they've been depending upon these Social Security benefits. Let's look back at one more issue. If we would have put our monies into an actuarially sound program for retirement at age 65, we would have been getting back between somewhere in the neighborhood of $6,000 to $10,000 a month return at retirement. Instead, they stole the funds and they spent them. That's why Social Security recipients only get $300 to $900 a month. And unfortunately, when the government collapses this program, and they will collapse it, those people are going to be hurt severely. And so I'm recommending that those people, everybody gets into a situation where they start producing revenues, whether they're retired or not, they're going to sustain themselves and only save those funds so that they will be prepared for the collapse of the Social Security program. Okay, so how are we going to benefit by the Social Security collapse? Well, we won't be spending all those revenues now to fund these enormous government agencies that are robbing us of our wealth. Now we can invest those funds in the freedom, free enterprise, productivity, research, development, and have the biggest boom in productivity ever in the history of America. And we're on the verge of that now. All we have to do is transfer funds away from the destructive enterprises like governments interfere in our rights to life, liberty, property, and freedom, and invest that in business opportunities, and we'll flourish big time in America. Now, how's that going to help people? Well, it's going to give them the wherewithal, the funds, now to take care of themselves. Now they don't have to rely on government anymore. We can put all these people back to work again instead of throwing them out of work. Instead of sending all these companies overseas, we can provide those job opportunities here in this country.
We hear about constitutional rights all the time. Can you explain?
Well, the question is do you have constitutional rights?
That's the question.
Okay, well, if you're a government employee, you do, because the Constitution is, I'm going to correct that by saying the Constitution is a contract. It's a contract between we, the people of the United States of America, the sovereign people, with our government employee hireling servants, which are our bound slaves of service according to our will. In other words, we work to pay our government employees to serve us. We work for them to
to do what we tell them to do. And the Constitution is a contract that the Founding Fathers established to bind them down from illegal and extracurricular activities. So it's a contractual obligation that they entered into. We did not, enter into any agreement with them to do what they tell us to do. They entered into an agreement to do what we told them to do and what we tell them to do. So therefore, government employees have duties and responsibilities assigned to them by the Constitution. We derive no rights at all from the Constitution because the Constitution was not a document that gave the people rights. It restricted the government from illegal and extracurricular activity. Now, the rights that a lot of people refer to are not rights because we got our rights from God. Therefore, we owe our servitude to God. Government employees got their duties and responsibilities from us, and therefore they owe their servitude to us. Okay, so when you're talking about constitutional rights, most people are talking about from the slave sense of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, whereby when people submit themselves to the jurisdiction of a government, become eligible for benefits from the government, they are now required to give the government whatever they ask for. In other words, when you got a Social Security number, you became a benefited slave of the government. The Hill versus Hinkle case, the Supreme Court case, ruled that you owe nothing to the government as long as you received nothing therefrom. Therefore, because you submitted yourself to the government as a slave to receive benefits from them, you now owe your servitude to them. Therefore, you now have the right to privileges and immunities that the government grants you as one of their slaves. However, it's quite frequently you'll find that the government just totally, takes away those privileges and immunities since they have the right to do that because they gave you the privileges and immunities so they can eliminate them anytime they want to. In other words, you're now under the government instead of over the government. So if you want to change that relationship, put yourself back on top of the government instead of being under the government, then what you have to do is you have to release yourself from all benefit privileges from that system.
In recent times, it seems our rights have been eroded by court decisions, legislation, and executive orders. Is the Constitution still valid?
The Constitution is still valid, but our rights have not been eroded. Our rights are still the same because we got those rights from God, and God has not diminished those rights. The people diminish those rights when they submit themselves to slavery and bondage under a government. Okay, so the court now has the authority to remove, privileges and immunities and restrict what people call rights because you are their bound slave. So the court is gradually eroding the rights, the privileges, and immunities of slaves. They are not interfering with the rights of free people because they're free people are not under the jurisdiction of the courts, nor are they under jurisdiction of the executive branch of government, nor are they under the jurisdiction of the legislative branch of government.
Okay, with a federal constitution, why is there a need for state constitutions?
Those are two different jurisdictions. The federal government has got the authority to handle legislation for the District of Columbia, American Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, and interstate commercial regulation. And that's the only power they have, except, of course, for running the post office and the jurisdictional authority over magazines, forts, arsenals, dockyards, ceded to them by the states for the defense of the country. Outside of that, there's no other federal jurisdiction. Therefore, the federal constitution is to take care of that jurisdictional authority that they've been assigned, which includes, of course, crimes on the high seas. They have no jurisdictional authority whatsoever to interfere in states' rights. States are sovereign over the federal government. Therefore, the state constitutions were designed to bind down government employees from illegal and extracurricular activity. The state government employees only have the authority to do those things that are in the Constitution, that are delegated to them, and nothing more.
Okay, why is the Constitution of the United States or state constitutions not taught in school? Or not taught very much in school?
Well, the constitutions are a restriction upon government. It binds them down from illegal and extracurricular activity and only allows them to do exactly what they're assigned to do in the constitutions. Now, if that was taught in the schools, everybody would know how limited government is required to be in the United States of America. And they'd be wiser about what a government employee can or cannot do to them. So, by allowing people to be raised in ignorance in these school systems, people get the idea that the government can do whatever they want to do, and when they come by and tell you that they want to do something to you, that you have an obligation to comply. For example, The government has the right to ask questions. That's one of their laws, by the way, and I'm not even going to tell you what law it is because it doesn't make any difference, but they'll come and tell you, I have a right to ask you these questions. Okay, so your response to that is, okay, fine, go ahead and ask me your questions. Let the officer, whoever it is, ask the questions, and after the officer finishes, say, okay, you have fulfilled your obligations under the law, you have asked your questions, you are now dismissed, you may leave. And the reason for that is, you don't have any obligation to answer the questions. He didn't tell you that you had an obligation to answer the questions. He only said he had the right to ask it. Well, anybody has any right to ask you questions, but you don't have to pay attention to them. You don't have to respond. You can ignore them. Okay, and if they taught the Constitution properly in the schools, when government employees came around with their idiotic requests, you could say, okay, you've asked your questions. You are now dismissed. You may leave.
Okay, where in the Constitution does it require us to pay income tax?
There is no constitutional authority that allows for the income tax system at all, period. The income tax in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution of the United States of America, well, first of all, as you say, honing on the tax number one, gave the Congress the power to levy impost, duty, and excise taxes. There was never any authority for an income tax. So when they did the 16th Amendment of the Constitution that imposed an income tax, it turned out to be defined as an excise tax, and it was written in the Constitution as an excise tax, not as a direct tax, because it was not allowed to have an apportionment, a census, or enumeration. That put it directly in the category of excise taxes. So now income tax now is really a part of the excise taxes, which the Bruce Shaber versus Union Pacific Railroad case said that it gave the government no new taxing power. Why? Because they already had the power to tax excises, things. In other words, you have never paid an income tax on your earnings. You have never done that. What you have been paying is an insurance premium payment for benefits that the government made you eligible for. Hence, the tax is on the benefits, the thing benefits. Under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution of the United States of America, the Congress has the power to tax things. And if you buy that thing, you have to pay the tax. All you have to do is learn to stop getting the thing, i.e. benefits from the government. Now you don't have to pay for them.
Okay, if that's true of income tax, then do we have to pay Social Security tax?
Of course not. The more you go through this course, the more you're going to find out that all these taxes are 100% voluntary. That's why all the IRS commissioners have always said from the beginning of time that our system is based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance. Okay, so the question is when did you volunteer? You became a volunteer when you got down to the Social Security office and you applied for a Social Security number, you made yourself eligible for the benefits, then you went to your employer and the employer deducted the insurance premium payment for the benefits through income taxes and Social Security taxes. Okay, now it says it's based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance. So what happened when you file a return? Well, number one, you assessed yourself taxes. You determined that you owed some. Then you put that on the form, and then you became a tax collector, and you collected those taxes from yourself. You signed the form under the penalties of perjury that all the information was true and correct, and then you volunteered to send the form in along with the payment to the government. In other words, you volunteered to be a tax assessor for the government, a tax collector for the government, and you volunteered to participate as a benefited slave of the state by doing this. Now the problem that you have is once you have done this, you have given them a belief that you know that you're a person required to file or pay, even though you really weren't. Now you have the belief that you were, therefore if you just simply stop filing and stop paying, they're going to possibly charge you criminally with willfully failing to file returns, and that's where people get in trouble. So what you have to do now to correct the situation is you have to give up the Social Security number. You have to close down every account associated with the Social Security number. You have to stop having income associated with the Social Security number. Now, no paperwork with your name and their number will go through their office. Now you won't have any income because income is properly defined as, and this is my definition, you're not going to find it anyplace else, the proper definition of income is it's the measurement that they use to determine what your insurance premium payment is for the benefits that you made yourself eligible for from the government.
Yeah, why does it seem like every time I turn around I need a license to go out and make a living?
You don't. God gave us ownership of our labor in Ecclesiastes 3:13. In other words, we own our labor. We have a right to sell it for a profit if we want to, or an exchange. And if you stop and think about it, we don't have any obligation to include the government as a third party to our contractual relationships. Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution of the United States of America prohibits the government from interfering in our contractual relationships. That means we have a right to contract with one another without including the government as a third party. When you go down and get a license from them to go into any kind of a business activity, any kind of a license, you make them a third party to the contractual obligation. Therefore, they have a right to get their share of the pie out of the business operation. And, of course, they will not share in the losses. They'll only share in the profits, and they'll take those up front off the gross. They don't care if you make a profit or not. They don't care if you're starving to death. They want their piece of the action first. So they're a very, very poor partner. All they put into it is to interfere with your business activities. They don't put any investment into it to invest in your business. They don't put any work into it to invest into the business. All they do is burden you with all kinds of rules, regulations, and taxation that have bankrupted numerous businesses all over the country. So, would you go into a partnership with me if I offered you a partnership and I agreed that I would not put anything into your partnership? That I would not, I would be there to over-regulate you and take all the money that I wanted to take from that partnership agreement. And I would not be responsible for any losses. Would you go into an agreement with me under those conditions? You wouldn't, would you? So why are you including the government as a partner in your business associations when they don't put anything into it? They only want to take everything out of it. So no, we don't have to have the licensing from the government. License is permission to do something that would be otherwise illegal. We have a right to work and to earn a living and to be in freedom of association with each other without having any interference from governmental agencies. They only have the power and the authority, constitutionally speaking, to protect our rights to life, liberty, and property. Their interference in our lives to try to, you know, foresee everything in the world that could go wrong and establish all kinds of rules and regulations to prevent something from possibly going wrong limits our ability to progress to the highest degree possible in our lives, personal lives, and business activities.
Okay, you're saying to us that we don't need licenses. You mean we don't even need a driver's license?
Once again, a license is permission to break the law, to do something that would otherwise be illegal. Now, the question is I'm going to ask you the question. Have you ever bought computer software?
Yes.
No, you haven't. You bought the license to use the software. Because computer companies that make software, they don't sell the software. If they did, you would own the software. Now you could copy it off and sell it all over the country yourself and make a big profit off of their work. So they won't sell you the software. What they'll do is sell you a license to use their software. And it's illegal for you to use their software contrary to that licensing agreement. Okay, and you could suffer severe criminal and civil penalties if you were to use the software contrary to the agreement. Okay, so license is permission to do something that would otherwise be illegal. In other words, it would be illegal for you to use that software contrary to the licensing agreement. So what is a driver's license? Driver's license is a license that licenses you to use the state's motor vehicle. That is correct. When you register that car with the state, it became state property as a licensed motor vehicle with the Department of Motor Vehicles. In other words, it does not become a motor vehicle until it's licensed with the Department of Motor Vehicles. They now own the car. Now, they are giving you permission to use their car. So as long as you want to use their car, then, yes, you have to have the license to drive their car to be within the law. But you have the right to buy and own property and travel privately in your own privately owned property, you know, without a license. That consists of, you know, number one, being sovereign, because slaves have no right of property ownership. Number two, you have to pay for the property in a lawful money of account. That's the automobile. Now, you don't license it with the government. Now you can put on your own plate to identify your own car. Now you have the right of free travel because you have a right to move your private property from one location to another without any interference from our government employees. And now that becomes personal private property as opposed to commercial property.
How is it that the state can require me to buckle my seatbelt and also provide insurance on my car?
That's because it's not your car. If it was your car, then you would have a right to use it as you please, as long as you do not interfere with someone else's right to life, liberty, and property. All the state is doing is regulating your use of their car. since they're really the owner of the car, in other words, a trustee over the automobile, they have a responsibility not only for taking care of that car, but also taking care of you because you're a benefited slave of the state. If something happens to you and you can't afford to take care of yourself, you're going to go to a county hospital and they have to pay to take care of you. And that automobile that is out on the highways could be very injurious to someone else in the event that, it gets in an automobile accident and other people get hurt or whatever. So therefore, all these rules and regulations are to protect their property rights because they have a specific cost in automobile accidents. They have to pay for injuries and to take care of people that maybe become permanently disabled. So that's where the regulatory authority comes from, is having a vested financial interest in the individual or the automobile. I should say the motor vehicle. So all you have to do is switch out of being a slave of the state, be a sovereign, be free, don't have any benefits coming from them, don't be eligible for that hospital care. Number two, don't register your property with the government because that's like giving it away to Satan, you know? You don't do that. You keep it under your authority and your control so that your personal private property right issues are there to protect you in the free use of those property rights.
Okay, you're sounding like kind of one of those radical patriots now. What's the deal here? Are you in the militia or what?
You mean I'm sounding like the founding fathers? You know, they were all labeled as radicals. This has got nothing to do with being radical or militant or anything like that. It just has to do with the fact that this is a free country. This is not supposed to be a communist country. And the government that we have hired to protect our rights to life, liberty, and property is now robbing us of not only our rights to life, liberty, but they are robbing us of all of our property. And they're not only that, they're imposing every plank of the Communist Manifesto in this country, and they're doing it on a voluntary basis. And I get a lot of flack on that because people want to dress it up and say it's socialism. They want to put some icing on the communist cake, you know, so it looks better and so that it tastes better. Folks, you have to go get a copy of the Communist Manifesto. They are enforcing every plank of the Communist Manifesto through these social welfare programs, the second plank of the Communist Manifesto being the heavy progressive income tax. Okay, so if you want, you have a choice. And I'm not going to infringe on anybody else's right to be a slave. If you want to be a slave, that's fine, but don't interfere with my right to be free. I have a right to be free. You have a right to be free. You have a right to raise your children in a free society. And that's going to necessitate taking on a responsibility and possibly having some difficult times or losses or whatever. There's a price to pay for freedom. That means we have a right to use our own brains and act accordingly. And, of course, not be held accountable for it unless we're injuring someone else's right to life, liberty, and property. And that's the price of freedom. You know, in a free society, you don't regulate people's behavior to prevent something from happening. What you do in a free society is if something happens that interferes with someone else's right to life, liberty, and property, then you impose a civil or a criminal penalty. You don't impose the penalties before something happens. You impose it after it happens. In a communistic society, you impose the penalties before it happens. In other words, we have all these speed limits on the roads. Why? Because the government views everybody that's driving on the roads to be totally incompetent and irresponsible. Therefore, we have to have all these rules and regulations to have an orderly flow of traffic on the roads. Well, you know, that would be fine if we do have a derelict society. But I don't believe that we do, and I think you're going to find out if you go down the roads, you know, traveling nowadays, the majority of your speeders are going to be licensed drivers, seeing what they can get by with, and people who are insured, because if they have an accident, then the insurance company is going to pay for it. If you didn't have insurance, you're going to be more responsible because you've got to pay for it. It has to come out of your pocket. Therefore, that's a motivating influence to cause you to conduct yourself in a more responsible, safe manner, and not interfere with someone else's right to life, liberty, and property. And that's what we have to do. We have to learn how to be a self-governing people if we're going to be free. And we do have that right to choose in this country. The government is not removing our rights to freedom. It's the people volunteering for slavery by getting a Social Security number, putting themselves underneath the jurisdictional authority of the government that's waiving the rights. It's giving them up. Now, if you want your children to learn about this, you have to teach them. They're not going to learn in school.
If I quit filing tax returns, won't the IRS come after me and make life miserable for me? How am I going to protect myself?
Well, yes, that is correct. They'll probably make life miserable for you. And how do you protect yourself? Well, first of all, they're only going to come after disobedient slaves. Disobedient slaves are people who make themselves eligible for the benefits, and then they do not comply with the rules and regulations governing the use of the benefits. Okay, so here you are. You're going down the Social Security Administration. You're getting a Social Security card. You're making yourself eligible for a whole host of disability benefits and welfare benefits and retirement benefits. The average age recipient of Social Security is age 30. They have to spend a lot of funds every day to pay out all their obligations for these Social Security payments. They have to get them from someone. They've got to shake down the disobedient slaves. And of course, the obedient slaves. And of course, the obedient slave category is growing smaller and smaller every year. Okay, so it's a simple method, you see, of reorganizing your affairs. The biblical principle of this is you owe your servitude to whoever you have submitted yourself into bondage to. In other words, if you have decided you're going to be a good slave to the state, if you've submitted yourself to the state for bondage, you know, for benefits and bondage, well, then you have to give them whatever they ask for. You have to be a good slave. But if you can, be free. In other words, if you give up all eligibility for the benefits, now you don't owe any income taxes. Now there's no paperwork going to the government saying that you owe any taxes. Now it would be a fraud for them to try to collect taxes from you for benefits you're not eligible for. Now they cannot require you to file a return. Now you have no obligation to do whatever they tell you to do, either to file or to pay, simply by not being eligible, by not having any income that is subject to an insurance premium payment deduction for the benefits.
So let me see if I understand you correctly. Are you saying then that that in order to avoid the liability for income taxation, we need to revoke or get rid of our Social Security numbers and our driver's licenses and pull our kids out of public schools, etc.?
That is not correct. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that there's two different avenues to look at here, you see, and all these penalties from government are not all interrelated. In other words, all the penalties from government are not tied to Social Security number. In other words, you could not have a Social Security number and have a driver's license and still be subject to, you know, the rules of the road under the driver's license, but you would not be subject to the income tax because you didn't have the Social Security number. So, different licenses are different penalties. There's a different penalty, you know, for a business license because it's a different licensing agreement to make the government one of your partners in that business opportunity. So what you have to do is you have to decide what you want to choose. I don't push these ideas off on anybody. All I'm saying is you have a right to be free and you have a right to be a slave. You have a right to choose to have a license. You have a right to choose not to have a license. Okay, so as it pertains to income tax and Social Security tax, filing and paying, if you're going to have a Social Security number, if you're going to be eligible for the benefits, and you should go ahead and be a good slave and pay whatever is required for that. But you can utilize Internal Revenue Service rules and regulations to substantially reduce or eliminate all income tax liabilities. It's much more difficult to eliminate the Social Security tax liabilities, but those can be reduced up to 95% without a whole lot of difficulty. Just requires a little bit of an expense. And then as it applies to the driving issue, you know, if you don't mind being subject to the rules of the road where you have to, be under the government's thumb for that kind of regulation, well, that's not a difficulty. Get a driver's license, be subject to those particular penalties. But what I'm saying is you have a right to be free. You have a right to own property and travel in that privately owned property. You have a right to engage in freedom of association with other individuals to earn funds without the government's interference. You don't have any obligation to get a license and make them a third party of the contract because the government is prohibited from interfering in our rights and obligations of contracts. Now, there's an overall, overriding consideration with everything I just said. And that consideration is the fact that when you submit yourself to the government for bondage by getting benefits from them through the Social Security system, then you are one of their bond slaves, and they do have an overall jurisdictional authority over you to govern you wherever you go. And prior to 1933 and the Emergency War Powers Act, that only applied to foreigners. Foreigners only had that kind of a restriction and control upon them. They had to have a license to go to different places in this country because they were considered to be communist. It was not until the United States citizens become communist that all these regulatory authorities apply to them. And if you stop and think about it, the Social Security card is the membership in the United States District of Columbia Communist Party. And when you got that card, in other words, that is the imposition of every plank of the Communist Manifesto. When you got the card, you became a card-carrying communist of that jurisdiction. And because you are a card-carrying communist, they have the authority to regulate you and to control you and to supervise you in everything you do, everywhere you go, everything you say. And that's really a sad thing to consider, is that this country has always been in opposition to communism. It's always been a free country. But yet, through this voluntary program of theirs, they've imposed voluntary communism over the majority of the citizens of the United States of America in a very, very subtle and covert way that people didn't understand. And it came upon them very, very slowly. And people are just starting to wake up and realize what's happened to them, how they've lost the right to even build an addition to their home. You got to go down to the government and get permission. In some states, you can't put on a specialized plate on an automobile without violating the law. They regulate every facet of your travel. In other words, let's put it this way: on travel, you stop at a red light in town, and you're waiting for the red light to change, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody within 50 miles of where you're at. And it's illegal for you to go through that stoplight and continue on to your destination until the light changes to green. And you should be asking yourself, why am I sitting here at this red light when there's no one else in the world around? In other words, you're sitting there because the rule says you cannot go through that red light, which overrides your common sense that comes from your brain saying there's nobody around. If I go through here, I'm not injuring anyone else's right to life, liberty, and property. Therefore, I have a right to go through that red light. There's no injury involved there. There's nobody around. It's not careless to do that. Okay, but the idiotic rules have a tendency to override common sense. And I have one overriding rule of law. Use your God-given common sense, logic, and reasoning processes.